This is Arts Alive, the podcast of the St. Pete Catalyst. I am your host, Bill DeYoung. There's a new show at Jobsite Theater opening tonight. It is called The Butterfly's Evil Spell. It's based on a 1920 play by Spanish playwright and poet Federico Garcia Lorca. It's a very interesting show. I was able to see it this week, and I'm happy to welcome director and artistic director of Jobsite, David M. Jenkins.
Thank you for having me.
And, of course, Spencer Myers, who is new to me. He hasn't been in here before. Spencer's a longtime artistic associate with Jobsite. I've seen him, and you have too, folks, in a million shows. And also had a role in, he's not in the cast, but he had a major role in this production, which we're going to talk about. Hello, Spencer.
Hi.
I saw you, well, I saw both of you, really, with the Florida Bee Orchestra a few weeks ago. And that was great.
I'm glad you liked it.
No. The thing is that we never met before. And I want to say I really liked that. We were sitting up in the front. I was sitting right in front of Jeremy so I could heckle him the whole time.
As one should.
So it was great. Let's talk about this show. It's very poetic. Mm-hmm. It's almost like the cast of six is reading or acting out poetry.
Absolutely.
Okay. I will say that If there was a message there, I wasn't sure that I got it. Is it metaphorical? I mean, these are insects in a meadow. Mm-hmm. It's very beautifully done. Give me the story, David. What's it about? What are we seeing?
Did you read my director's note? You probably didn't.
Actually, I didn't. Is it in this thing?
No, there were QR codes I put up everywhere that try to get people to
jump I'm old school, man. I don't
yeah,
do
no,
that.
Yeah, you, go ahead. The ambiguity is intentional. I think that, the play is definitely about things, but Federico Garcia Lorca was playing with symbolism, which was a relatively new movement in theater at that time, which was rejecting notions of naturalism and realism and all that stuff to operate at the level of the symbol. And some of the symbols in this play mean more than one thing, and so it kind of depends on what you take away from it, what the actual meaning is. But I'm urging people to walk in, not trying to tie the play down into a chair and force a confession out of it, but to see where their mind takes them and what they make of it, and maybe you just haven't gotten there yet.
It's very beautifully done, as I said, but I was sure that I didn't get it if there was a message. You know, not that I didn't enjoy the experience, mm-hmm. mind you, because everything you guys do is so well done. But
maybe that was what there was to get for you.
Okay.
I was enjoying it. Simply breathing and being among people and not thinking about the Conclave or the Orange Man or anything else for 75 minutes for some people might just be good enough, right? And listening to beautiful poetry and looking at beautiful art and having a beautiful experience.
Well, let's talk about the plot, as it were. Mm-hmm. These are, as we said, a bunch of bugs, mm-hmm. as Gary Larson would say, in a meadow, engaging with one another, mostly in English, sometimes in Spanish, mm-hmm. which I thought was kind of cool. That's it. I mean, there's people and there are puppets, which are brilliant, which we're going to get to in a minute. They're not really people and they're not really bugs.
No, and I think, I mean, maybe to bottom line it, I know that Federico Garcia Lorca, when he wrote the play, he used the idea of insects. And in the original Spanish, they were coriana, which are cockroaches.
Yeah.
And we were like, no way in Florida can we do a play where it's a play with a cast of roaches.
I had read that was the original.
Nobody's coming, right? Like, nobody's coming to the roach play. So
the roach play.
One of the first things we decided to do was like, how can we change this up and make them other insects? The scorpion is the scorpion, the butterfly, and then everybody else was cockroaches in the original version. Really, it's the idea of the lowest of the low. Right? Like, truly, like the things that are below the lowest of the low. Mm. And using, he was using this really as a metaphor for how maybe he felt personally. And so you could look at this play and say, this is really kind of getting at anyone who is marginalized, anyone who feels less than. And that the idea of wanting something, desiring something that is far beyond what you are, whether it is you're a roach and that's a butterfly and you don't deserve the butterfly because you're a roach.
Yeah.
And there were a lot of other things going on in Garcia Lorca's personal life and in his head that made this metaphor mean even more.
Right? Yeah, I read about him. I understand that.
And so at the level of wanting this thing that you can never have, that you know you're not supposed to have, mm-hmm. but wanting it anyway, and desire, right? Like desire, passion, love, And of course, then there's the other side of all of those things, which get into the ideas of, like, you know, beauty and death. And there's the scary side of all this, too. So that butterfly becomes symbolic of more than just love, or more than just this thing of the object of desire, but in a weird way also represents death. Right. And so I think, and we lost the ending of this play. Garcia Lorca produced this when he was 20.
Yeah.
But he was embarrassed by it in his later years. He said it was the work of an immature young writer. And
sometimes that's the best thing about it.
Right. Right. And right. I think that's beautiful. And so later, you know, he would not say that this was his first play. And then upon his death, it was lost. Right. But and when they found it, it was incomplete. They didn't have the whole thing. So there were some notes and some memories of what happened, kind of like some stuff that happened with Shakespeare, right? And
right.
And we our ending was something that you saw that was not scripted, that was not in there. You know, obviously there were songs in the play that came from other Lorca poetry,
right?
And so, you know, this really is a new thing.
One of the things I think that jumped off the page for me, mm-hmm. if you will, mm-hmm. metaphorically speaking, is the fact that you were so able to utilize different talents of your artistic
yeah.
associates, your
yes.
team.
Yes.
Jeremy's music is unbelievable. That sort of gossamer, shimmery mm-hmm. insect music mm-hmm. that he did.
Mm-hmm.
So all the words, or most of the words, came from Garcia Lorca's yeah. poetry, and Jeremy set this to music.
Yep.
So a lot of this is musical, but you also have Katrina,
mm-hmm.
who is, I swear, your VIP over there, and who is the butterfly, who in effect, becomes the butterfly because she does this aerial stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And that must have been nice. Hey, we can have you do this.
And, right, and bringing in Alexander Jones to do this choreography.
And yeah, exactly.
Right. And Chris Jaffray with the scenic stuff and the lights. And this is, you know, we wanted this really multidisciplinary sort of just spectacle that we've been playing around with in different ways
yeah.
Over the last couple of years. And obviously that leads directly to Spencer and these puppets.
You know, I think in one of your notes, you talked about how we're drawing on the same kind of inspiration or jet fuel that mm-hmm. that fueled, you know, Shock-Headed Peter right. and maybe Alice and some yep. of the other stuff. This is different.
Yeah.
This is very gentle and almost and subdued, I think.
Yeah.
That was on purpose.
Yeah.
You know, how could you do a big, like, maximum production?
I think that the thing that we continue to say to the cast is this idea of slowing down. You're never in a hurry. Slow down. Breathe.
Yeah.
And that is, if you've ever been in a rehearsal room for me, not my style. I'm like, you can go faster, talk faster, speak up, talk faster, get rid of the cue gaps. And also just from the idea that Jeremy even talks about the music here is very small. It's insects. Everything
yeah.
that is happening, he's like, what does a forest sound like to the bugs? So, you know, sonically there's wind and things in leaves and
your birds way off in the distance,
right?
Yeah.
So it's like this tiny little delicate thing because they're insects and we're trying to do this all at sort of scale. And that was informing every one of our work, you know, all of our work.
His talent on the keyboard is unbelievable because it does, it must be a synthesizer. You tell me that it sounds like he's playing like a gut string Spanish guitar mm-hmm. the whole time.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm watching them, I'm going, where's the guitar player? And I'm going, no, that's Jeremy with his little bug antennae swinging, yep. you know, setting off in the corner of the stage. He is such an amazing talent, and it almost seemed like destiny that job site and Jeremy were going to find each other.
Oh, man. And this is, you know, right now with Alex Jones and Jeremy and me, this is now like, you know, we started this relationship with Rocky Horror, which was a very particular, you know, out of a package yeah. kind of musical, and which made me want to bring Alex into work on Gory Stories to help me with some things and make some stuff prettier. And then it's like moving to this, which is here's a devised piece that we're all three literally, you know, all of not creating this thing out of the ether.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just amazing, you know, to have this opportunity to be able to work with so many different people that come from so many different artistic disciplines and backgrounds
yeah.
and put all that together.
It's not commercial, this
nope.
show. And you've done a lot of things that aren't commercial, let's mm-hmm. put it that way, but you've also done some things that were real barn busters.
Yep.
You know, and the crowds come in. I mean, do you think about this when you go in? Should I program something so gentle and minimalist in the middle of my big rock and roll heavy duty season?
That was not at all the thought. It's a terrible idea to do this. to just be honest, right? Like mm-hmm. in this economy and people's attention spans, they like we can't grab people's attention with things that aren't that sort of familiar and, you know, right? Like this is a terrible business decision to do this show.
The Roach play.
It is a terrible business decision, but we did not do this play last year for a number of reasons, part of which being the economy and where people were at. I was afraid of the show taking a bath. We put it off for a year, and, you know, things aren't getting any better, and they're not going to get any better. They're not going to get any better next season. They're not. They're probably going to get worse. And so for me, it was like a now or never decision to do it, and it's something I believe in. And, you know, sometimes, Bill, you just need to do things because it's the art you want to do.
Yeah.
And this is the art we want to do, and I pray and I hope that there are enough people out there paying attention that come see it.
Hey, hey to that.
This is the kind of stuff that gets us geeked up and excited.
It was a creative decision and that, you know, I could shout that to the hills. I could tell watching it. I could tell that it's not going to be the Rocky Horror Crack One. This is the greatest show I've ever seen. But for the people
who appreciate it, might be the greatest show people have ever
seen. It may well, if you're going to see it, it's different.
Right. We're doing a symbolist play that we've converted into a multimedia spectacle experience based on a 1920 symbolist play from a Spanish playwright about cockroaches. Right? Like, okay, that elevator pitched that to someone, and, you know, again, it's not The Shark Is Broken where I get to be like, oh, it's a play about the making of Jaws, and they're like, sign me up, coach.
Yeah.
Right?
Like, yeah. I've already bought my tickets for that one, here but go. We'll go there. It's time to talk to Spencer Myers, who has been with this company since 2007, I believe.
2007, yeah.
Are you a Tampa guy?
I am a Tampa native.
Okay.
I'm born and raised. I'm so, one of those rare ones.
Was it one of those things that I've heard from, God, so many people, from Giles Davis all the way, you know, all the way over to Katrina and everybody else, that once I ran into this guy, Amy Gray told me the same thing. There was no choice. I got to be with Jobsite.
Yeah, actually, and David knows this story. I was in high school. I remember coming to see a show called Maxwell. It was an original Joe Pop rock musical. Mm-hmm. And I saw the show, I left the show, I called my mother and I said, I want to work for a company like this. That show was amazing. And then, you know, years later, I ended up getting cast in Gory Stories. It was the very first professional theater I had ever done. And then I've been with Jobsite ever since.
Were you an actor before that? Or did you say, I wonder if I can do this? Oh, okay.
I mean,
a little community theater here and there.
Everything I've learned from Jobsite. So wow. I'm very happy.
So, you know, I've seen you in a lot of shows. You are kind of one of those actors that I always, you should have seen him in Hedwig. And years before I moved here, before I was writing about theater, you know, Amy Gray can't stop talking about you, by the way, and Hedwig.
We're very, very good friends.
Yes. She's fabulous. And we should point out that in this show, you created the puppets, the insect puppets. What was your mandate there? I mean, did David say, do what you want? Or did you just say, I'm doing this?
You know, David and I actually have a really good working relationship when it comes to things like this. David's also the type of individual that he trusts you to, that you're going to have the correct end result and because you understand where everyone's going and he trusts you to do your thing. We did have a lot of conversations about what we were going to do with these bugs. The decision was made very quickly not to do cockroaches and to do beetles instead, which is a much better idea.
I like the rhinoceros beetles. That was cool.
Yes. That's one of my favorites. And so we chatted about it. I went through the script. And then I did a bunch of sketches. I've looked at so many images and videos about beetles.
Yeah.
And I have a new appreciation for them.
Me.
I mean, understandably.
I love that speech in the beginning where they all say, "We're not disgusting. We're just insects or whatever."
Absolutely.
It was. Yeah. Absolutely. Sorry. Interrupted you.
No worries. But you know, we did. You know, all the cockroaches were going to be beetles. You know, then we included a spider into the mix.
Yeah.
And then it became go ahead and design things. So I did a bunch of research. I found various beetles that I thought would be great for certain characters. And I just did a bunch of sketches, met with David and Katrina one night, and I said, all right, this is what I've got. This is what I'm thinking.
Uh-huh.
And we went through all the characters, Katrina was wonderful because she took on a lot of the smaller puppets, like the fireflies and the glowworms, and that really helped take that pressure off so I could just focus on those that were going to be on stage.
Well, what's interesting is there's something, especially the one that Nick has.
And I
don't know the characters' names, of course, but it's almost like space age looking. I mean, they're kind of robotic looking bugs, and they're not creepy at all.
Well, nobody wants to actually see realistic bugs on stage that are larger than what they would normally be. So you know, that was something I had to think about. You know, try to make them a little cutesy, a little kind of Disney-esque.
It's like a folk art futurism.
Folk art futurism.
I like that. I'm stealing that.
And that was the aesthetic of the show, was embracing the cardboard. You know, David wanted the puppets made out of cardboard. Cardboard's very stiff. You just kind of have to embrace the fact that the materials are going to be limited or have limitations. And then I went with a very folk art style. Wanted things to look like they were hand painted. I wanted design choices that would be in old world folk art. Patterns, color choices. For the beetles, since they are groundlings, they are in the ground, I wanted them bulky. I wanted them stiffer. To then have something like the butterfly, which is more smooth and curved angles to her, and more ethereal, more otherworldly, so that Curio could find something so beautiful.
What's your history with puppetry? You know, is this your other job?
Oh no, I kind of like, and it's become part of my bio I am now, because I'm an illustrator, I've grown up in a family of artists, I've always drawn, I've always painted, sculpted other like small little statue type things. It really started with Skull of Connemara, when Job said, you know, it was the one show from a trilogy that we had never done, and I said, well, why not? Because of props. So I learned how to do props. And then I kind of became this specialty prop guy with Job Site, which then led to Alice.
When we worked on Avenue Q, you were looking at those puppets going, these things are janky. I could make them better.
Oh,
we'd rented those puppets.
And that was my own hubris right there. Of me just looking at, when we did Avenue Q, that was the first time I ever had to manipulate a puppet. And I learned how to work with puppets during that. But I did say, I'm like, this is really shoddily made. I could make something better. And then
Avenue Q headquarters in New York, probably it's a big warehouse full of those crummy puppets, right? And they send them out around the country, whoever's doing that job.
Yeah, if they want to hire me, I'll make them better. but you know, that was the first part of it. And then, you know, we decided to do Alice, and I'm a huge Alice in Wonderland fan, and I was like, yes, I want to make these puppets. Yeah. And then I had to learn how to make foam puppets. And that took a while. and that was a lot of stress and pain. But I was very happy with what I did. And then so this show came around and he wanted cardboard, I was like, oh, yeah. Oh, that's going to be easier. It wasn't.
Is it just lighter for the actors?
It's cheaper. Well, I'll say that much.
Okay, fair enough.
But
holds paint better?
It holds paint better. And that's what I loved about it. You know, where foam...
And they had that semi... What was it? Futuristic that you said? Folk art futurism?
Yeah.
Yeah, okay. I get it. Yeah.
And so for me, what I love about the cardboard compared to doing foam puppets is because I am an artist, I was able... They were little blank canvases. I could paint them to look exactly like I designed them. Mm-hmm. And that, to me, is what I love. You know, I get to see my art living and breathing on stage. Whereas, you know, with the foam... You know, you have to get it right the first time. Mm. There's no manipulating it later. So for me, I really love this show. It is the closest thing to my artwork. All the designs actually look like what the puppets look like on stage, and so I'm very proud of that.
I thought it was interesting too that the spider is part of the set.
Mm-hmm.
And who was the set designer again?
Chris Jaffray.
Okay. Let's give him a shout out here because it all works in such harmony together.
Right.
That the spider's head is movable, but the spider itself is part of the set. I thought it was kind of ingenious.
I sort of shackled Spencer, who ended up shackling Chris, because the one bug I said I knew I wanted, in the play, the Nigromantica, the necromancer, the sorceress character,
right.
I wanted that to be a spider.
Hmm.
I was like, that's just cool to have like this necromancer spider. Like that's.
Yeah.
And so then of course, so he had to build a spider, which meant we needed a way. And then we the spider couldn't come on and off stage. Like, mm-hmm. So the spider had to be incorporated into the set.
It's very interesting, yeah. the way that's done. What about the cast? How did you find these people? I mean, I recognized one or two from other uh-huh. shows that I'd seen, but a couple of them I didn't know. And I mean, what you need to be able to, you know, move. You need to be able to you know, sing, obviously, and obviously yeah. the other stuff. You got to be able to act and recite. But the ensemble parts are very tightly done. And
We did not know what we were going to have until we ended up having it. We still don't, right? Like, you know, it's opening night, and we'll know. We were originally playing with this idea of maybe making it completely bilingual play. Mm-hmm. Maybe even we do it in nights in Spanish and we do it in nights in English.
I think StageWorks has done that before, right?
And I've been told by actors, Spanish-speaking actors, how hard that is because you literally need to rehearse two different plays. So we have to double the rehearsal time. Mm-hmm. We can't do that. So that idea went away, right? Then it was, how much of this do we do? And by having so much Spanish in it that we're going to lose an Anglo audience because they're not going to understand it, or they're just not going to show up because they're going to be, I don't speak Spanish, right? So we've been going back and forth. So I was originally looking for performers who spoke Spanish if mm-hmm. they weren't, like, if not native or fluent. Five of the six cast members in the show do speak Spanish, either because that is their first language or because it is a familial language, or just simply learned it. Like Katie Hudel, who plays Sylvia, she learned Spanish, so she knows Spanish. Mm-hmm. We also needed people who needed to be able to sing, move, do puppets, and everyone really kind of has their own skill set, right? Like some people might be a much stronger mover and maybe not so much of a singer, right? They can. Mm-hmm. Some people are maybe a really great, you know, singer, but they can move, like maybe.
Alex is a very good teacher too.
That's well, and you yeah. know, all of us bringing everybody together to really create this cohesive ensemble. And Jessie Juliana, who I want to give a shout out to, she's been our resident Spanish expert in the show, being a native speaker. And, you know, we've got Federico Garcia Lorca's original Spanish script. We've got a English translation of it. And as we went going, can we make this English better? Going back to the Spanish. And Jesse was the one front row there to help with this kind of going back and forth. And then re-adding the Spanish back into the play when we decided to do that. Yeah. So it's kind of like each member of this ensemble has their own specialization, right? Mm-hmm. And then they've got, I would guarantee if I went down that list of six people, they've all got something they feel super comfortable with, and then they've got something that terrifies them. Nick Hoop, I've worked with a lot on puppet stuff.
Yep.
You know, he was Seymour in Little Shop of Horrors. He played the lead in Hand of God, where he literally had a puppet attached to his hand the whole time.
I remember.
So I knew he was a strong puppeteer.
Yeah.
You know, Cat and her movement work. And so, like, we just kind of, it was looking to find this cohesive ensemble that we felt could go anywhere with us because we weren't exactly sure where we were headed.
I think that's brilliant. I mean, did some of the actors did you have to sort of explain to them what you were trying to do? Because it's not it's not your traditional
play. No, I think we still are probably explaining some stuff to some of them. And, you know, the biggest thing along the way has just been trust us. Like trust the process, trust the work, trust that what we're doing here, because, you know, we said Jeremy is going to play the whole show. He's never going to take his hands off the keyboard.
Yeah.
And they didn't really start to hear that until the last week. And Jeremy, in the meantime, is listening to their rhythms and how things are going, and then began sneaking in music underneath them while they were speaking. Alex being like, trust me, I'll know it when I see it. We're building this thing and I don't know what it's going to be like. And me, like, it's just sort of trust us. So I would say there are cast members that are still like, what's this about? And that's okay.
Well, I didn't mean that so much as that the process would be different to actors.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know,
and we
this will change. We're doing this. Yeah. It's not The Odd Couple.
Yeah. In the offers to everybody, I said, you got to be okay with this kind of stuff. And if you're not okay with this, I get it. I understand. But this is not going to be the show for you. You're going to have a bad time.
Yeah. Yeah.
And thankfully, they were all up for the challenge.
Well, it's a beautiful show. The Butterfly's Evil Spell runs at Jobsite Theater through June the 1st. It actually opens tonight.
That's true.
At 7:30. And you can find all you need to know at jobsitetheater.org. And that's E-R.
That's for American.
Yeah, you know.
Make theater great again.
I people keep telling me, Bill, it's R-E because I use E-R, you know, unless it's a proper name. And no, it's not. The American spelling is E-R. That's a conversation for another
time. I also
time.
Use an Oxford comma, so, like,
you know. Well, don't get me started. Listen, Spencer Myers, such a pleasure to have you in here today.
Pleasure.
And best of luck, broken legs all around, et cetera, whatever they say.
As long as they're not puppet legs, we're good.
Fair enough. David Jenkins, as always, a pleasure.
Thank you.
Gentlemen, happy trails, and we'll see you down the road.